Hi, and welcome to the Rachel Sellers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing free education about all things mental health. This podcast is all about ending the mental health stigma and helping people cultivate a deeper awareness and understanding of themselves. It felt like time to switch things up. So for the next several episodes, you will be hearing from some amazing thought leaders and teachers in the mental health field, and more specifically within the eating disorder and anti-diet community. I'm your host, Rachel, and I'm pretty pumped that you're here.
I am so pumped about having today's guest on. She is a wealth of knowledge and wisdom in all of the things. And her name is Lauren, and she's pretty rad. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hello. My imposter syndrome like automatically just started right then and there. And you're like, she's a wealth of knowledge. And I'm like, ah. Oh, that's always what happens.
It's real. The imposter syndrome can feel so real. It is real.
Yes.
Well, Lauren, I feel that. I would love for you to introduce yourself. Tell the people who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So hi, I am, the full name's Lauren Ruth Martin. We can go with Lauren. But I am a therapist. I'm a speaker. A lot of the stuff I do is around perfectionism and procrastination and burnout. I'm trained in radically open DBT. So that informs a lot of what it informs the framework that I come from. And yeah, like chronic depression, anxiety, eating disorders, that's like my more clinical focus. And I have a podcast and all that stuff that I can tell you about later, but I just try to, you know, I call myself a woo girl gone mild. I've lived some life so that people don't have to do it the hard way.
Mm-hmm. A woo girl gone wild. Gone mild. Why did I say wild? Gone mild. Well, because,
I mean, some people want to stay wild. I don't. That was exhausting.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit. I'm just going to jump right in. What does wild mean? When you say that, what does that mean to you?
Oh, gosh. So in my 20s, late teens and 20s, it can sound like just like the normal sort of rebellion and everything, but I was basically just like counteracting all of my people pleasing and just like super drunk, super messy, a little bit of a hot mess. And it was, what was hard is that people liked it. Mm-hmm. Like I had a lot of friends that I was kind of known for being like the loose cannon, which is great and fun. But it's like a shame spiral all the time. So when I say wild, very unfiltered, but not in a skillful way. Like there was no middle ground with me. Mm-hmm. Quite damaging.
Yeah. Kind of like full speed ahead all the time.
Yes. Just like constant. And it was one of those like work hard, play hard sort of things. Like I was always busy, always doing something. And, you know, like when I talk about perfectionism, it looks very different everywhere. And that phase of my life, like where I was like in that wild phase was more of it was like I was being a hot mess to avoid people expecting perfection out of me. Does that make sense?
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah. It was almost, and correct me if this is wrong, it almost was like a rebellion against perfection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't want to disappoint myself. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be this character. Uh-huh. I'm just going to be this way so that people like, I don't want to have to pursue perfection anymore. I'm just going to be this and it can be messy. People don't have to expect much out of me. It was just a safe place to be.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And speaking of perfection, it's kind of what we were going to talk about today. And I'm so excited to learn from you about this. I am someone who considers myself a recovering perfectionist. It's something that I struggled with so much in my teenage years, in my early 20s. And for me, my my own personal recovery from an eating disorder, there was so much of like recovering from perfectionism that was intertwined with that. And, yes. And I talk about actually how the book that was the most helpful to me in my recovery was actually Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Imperfection.
Absolutely. Hands down. I mean, I know that every therapist is obsessed with Brené Brown and it almost gets mocked, but we're all obsessed for a reason because we did not talk about this.
Right.
Like this was, when I was in grad school, that was 2011 to 2014. And we did the Gifts of Imperfection group. And I just remember that being so mind blowing for everybody of like really how powerful shame was. And that's also when stuff like ACT came around. And I remember I did a presentation on ACT and like somebody, one of my colleagues, I love her. She raised her hand and she was like, "What do you mean thoughts are just thoughts? Like we don't challenge those." And I was like, "Cindy, I don't know." I was like, "This is just what's being taught and I can vibe with it so hard."
I love it. So for people who are listening who might not know what ACT is, can you explain what that is?
So essentially acceptance and commitment therapy is very similar to radically open DBT in that they are, they're part of these third and maybe even fourth wave models of therapy. So like there's the old school stuff that we just don't want to acknowledge because of everything that it's rooted in. And then your second wave was more like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, like where you're challenging your thoughts, your thoughts determine your actions. And I don't hate CBT. I think there's very much value in it, but it basically gave off the belief that you can control your thoughts.
Yeah.
And we realized that that's really not helpful. And for some people it is, but in some cases it's not. So now this third wave incorporates that mindfulness aspect to it. And more so of recognizing that we can't necessarily control what comes our way, even between our two ears, but we can pivot from there and we can sort of move things around to adapt to what our brains do to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was beautiful. A beautiful explanation of kind of that progression. And I'm with you. I don't, you know, CBT gets a really bad rap, I think, especially right now. And I don't hate it. I mean, I don't love it. And I think that this kind of third or fourth wave of ACT, of just this idea of like, our thoughts are just thoughts. They're not dictators. They're not bullies. They're not, they can feel like that. Absolutely. But this, that we can create space between our thoughts and just regard them a lot more neutrally.
Yes. I'm going to go off script for like 2 seconds.
Please do.
Do you think, since you're a newbie therapist,
well,
you're not really new. I said,
I feel new. I'm new.
Okay, you were broken in through 2020. But like you were in grad school. So you and I, I graduated 2014. Mm-hmm. When did you start grad school?
2018.
Okay. So in that, like, even though really that's like a 3-year difference, well, so it would be almost a 7-year difference as to when we started.
Yeah.
I think there's still some old school teachers and like where, again, that just goes into other stuff. But like there was a huge pivot from the clinician being almost like a power sort of thing.
Yes.
To now more human focused.
Yes.
And I wonder if that's why third wave therapies make so much more sense and why CBT isn't so lovely, because it's very formulaic. If that's even a word, formulaic.
Yeah, that's a word.
It's very dry. It's dry.
Yeah.
And I don't think people want dry therapy anymore.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, this movement in the therapy world and in this field to kind of break down that power differential in the room. And it's the old model, the old way used to be very much like the therapist is the expert in the room and the client is, you know, a tier down, if you will, from like power differential stance. And I think the field has said like, whoa, 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 that doesn't feel good. And so how are we evening out this power differential and positioning the therapist and the client on the same playing field and helping the client understand that they're actually the experts in their own lives, and that we, the therapist, can like facilitate and guide and offer skills like the CBT or the ACT skills, but that ultimately that the client has wisdom and so much to offer that we just help them tap into.
Yes. Yeah, that was, I could go on a tangent about that, but I love that because I think I just now connected that.
Yeah. It's an important shift. Important shift for sure. Yes. It was interesting, even with me, I don't want to pivot too much, but even with me being in school, like a little bit later, there still is this kind of, I think within the academia, this like alliance and allegiance to CBT, and they're still kind of like, oh, this new stuff, it's like so new.
Right.
Which is really interesting, but
yes, it's like, so, people are getting better, so
yeah exactly, like maybe it's working. Right. Yeah, tell us a little bit about how you define perfectionism. What is it?
So essentially, and this is probably like more like a non-clinical definition, perfectionism is not necessarily about what it looks like on the outside, but what's driving it internally. Because everybody has their different ways of sort of coping with perfectionism, whether that's through procrastination, avoidance, or just doing the most. But what we're essentially doing at our core is that we're trying to avoid shame. We're trying to avoid rejection. We're trying to avoid essentially just like showing the worst of ourselves, not only to others, but to ourselves. And so if we think about it, perfectionism is basically coping with fear. And all of that stuff can be rooted in like the bias that we've developed through life. You know, we've seen where perfection has served us. And when you're caught up in your perfectionism, you're so caught up in the product of your perfectionism, but not the cost.
Yeah. Like it's so easy to focus on the things that I'm gaining positively as a result of my perfectionism, but I'm very unaware of how detrimental it is being to me.
Yeah. And that, if you think about that, that's a huge thing that we're as an American culture, we're just now undoing. So like I was a gymnast growing up, and when I was competing in gymnastics was around 1996, you know, where Carrie Strug like did that, you know, vault on a broken ankle. And I remember my coach, like we just idolized that. Like they're so tough. Mm. They're so gritty. And, you know, fast forward to Simone Biles being like, no, I'm good. It brought up so much for me. I got so emotional. I got up early to watch it live, and I was so emotional and so happy for her because there's no way that could have happened before. But that's a great example of perfection focusing on the product instead of the cost.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you were a gymnast. That's awesome. I'm obsessed with gymnastics. I think it's the best thing to watch.
It's the best thing to watch. To do it is so much fun, but for a perfectionist, it's a nightmare. Yeah. Because you can, like, if your toe isn't pointed, you can lose everything. Mm-hmm. Not only for yourself, but then for your team.
Mm-hmm. So you're hyper aware of the costs. Yeah.
Yeah. Of the consequences.
Uh-huh.
Because if we think about the cost is what we expend.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more.
So if you think about like when I say cost, it's the currency. And so when you're in your perfectionism, you're expending energy. That's your currency. That's what you're pouring into it. And so when you say, oh, the cost of it, and again, we're just talking about semantics of language, but we're talking about you're trying to avoid the consequence or the result of your mess up. Mm-hmm. But the cost is so great because it's your mental health, it's your physical health, it's just like your general state of mind.
Yeah, it's almost like your tank, like your energy.
Yeah, like perfectionists. So if we think about it in the sense of like over and under control, in the sense of if you're more over controlled or have that ability to sort of shut things down and just go into autopilot, That's, oh yeah, polyvagal theory. So you can vibe with this. Yeah. That dorsal vagal being overused.
Yes.
And that's, if you think about perfectionism, it's the overuse and basically dying your needs down to not feel that shame, to not feel that rejection, to not feel that negative consequence of whatever messing up looks like.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's why perfectionists can get a lot done on so very little.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. When you, something you said was like, so much of what's underneath this perfectionism is fear. Fear is driving it. Can you say more a little bit about kind of the, I think you were talking kind of like the fear of shame, the fear of rejection, the fear of disappointment.
Yeah, the way that...
Yeah, oh, go ahead. No,
there
go ahead.
You go. So that fear, if you think about perfectionism, can be a very powerful signal. Like, oh my gosh, look at their house. It's always spotless. Oh my gosh, they always have these grades. But what it's hiding is a little bit of that humanity. And it's that fear, like how we were just talking about imposter syndrome. Well, what if they see this? What if they know this is all a sham? It's that all or nothing thinking. And so it's very much protective. And so if we think about the two ways that it can sort of look like, whether it's overcompensating and almost pushing others away and creating this force field around you so that you're untouchable, or just sheer avoidance and being perfectionistic behind the scenes, that also creates a force field of protection. It's putting everything on ourselves. And if you think about that fear, so if you're a perfectionist and you're completely isolated, right, because you have your force field of perfection around you, the reason that you probably don't like yourself is because one, you're stuck with yourself, but you're also putting everything on yourself. So the fear of letting somebody in, even though that's the antidote to perfectionism, right, is connection, like showing our humanity, showing our vulnerability. But the idea of that is downright threatening.
Yeah.
Because then they'll see that, oh, your perfect house, you know, you have a closet full of crap. And so in a way, I don't want to say like people's perfection is a sham, but a lot of time it is. And that's okay.
Right. Totally.
Because perfection's not meant to be attainable. There is no end. It is a moving target.
Yeah.
I might have to write that down. Perfectionism is a moving target.
It is, because it's never good enough.
No. And as soon as you get there, you're on to the next one.
Right. Yeah, it's like a checklist. Like, oh, check, done that one. Moving on. Next.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so you never arrive. And there's a difference between being a lifelong learner and being open to being humble. And then, oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought. There's a difference between being like a lifelong learner and constantly humbling yourself or not sitting in what you've done well.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be able to go this whole episode without saying her name at least a couple of times. So it kind of reminds me of when Brené Brown talks about the difference between perfectionism and healthy striving, and how, you know, kind of the difference between the two. And like, healing perfectionism is not saying that we never strive for things.
Right.
And yeah, like, what do you think about that?
I mean, because we want to be, we're all hard workers. There's a lot of good in what we do. There's a lot of good in the things that we accomplish from our perfectionism. Like, my perfectionism is what fuels me to be on top of it with my clients. You know, it keeps me in check. That's like why, just like anything, there's healthy perfectionism, there's unhealthy perfectionism. There's, you know, healthy procrastination and unhealthy procrastination.
Yeah.
Especially if you're kind of like one that's doing the most, you being able to sit and to actually enjoy your procrastination Like that's a game changer because now you're actually learning how to rest.
Yeah. Oh, I've never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. So that skill, one mindfully, it's a mindfulness skill. Instead of watching Real Housewives while simultaneously ruminating about that thing you need to do, mm-hmm. why don't you just watch the episode?
Yeah. I never really connected the dots between this concept of procrastination and like rest.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about how we're framing things, because there's so many times where I'm like, oh, I'm tired. I'll just watch this like episode and then I'll do my notes. And the thing is, I'm not actually resting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just beating myself up for not doing my notes in the moment while The Bachelor's on in the background.
Oh, guilty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And The Bachelor's long. So that's 2 hours of beating myself up.
Right? But then you're like, oh, but I'm resting.
Right.
Because I'm watching this show. But I'm not.
It's mindless. No.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So you actually were the first, because I started following you on Instagram probably like a year ago, I guess, at this point. And mm-hmm. you were the first person who I heard kind of link this idea of perfectionism and procrastination. Yes. And so funny. So that like blew my mind for a lot of reasons, because in my marriage, I am the perfectionistic one. Like if you're familiar with the Enneagram, like I'm a one and
oh, yeah.
I like check all the boxes, right? And I'm married to an Enneagram 4 who's an artist, and he's very like on the outside, cool, calm, and collected. Like you would never peg him based on his outward behaviors on uh-huh. as a perfectionist. And so like kind of early on in our marriage, you know, I was always joking that like, you know, I'm the one doing this work of recovering from this perfectionism thing, never once really talking about my partner. Mm-hmm. And he is a photographer and has just struggled. I don't think he would mind me sharing this, but just with some like, you know, self-doubt, and especially Nashville, like people are so talented, and avoiding sending emails because he doesn't want to put himself out there. And I just remember one day, I think it was after I like saw one of your posts about procrastination, I was like, I think you're a bigger perfectionist than me. I think we're just discovering this like 3 years into marriage.
Yes. Because
my mind is blown.
Yes. It just doesn't appear as productive.
Yes. That's the difference.
And that's like where I think procrastination, everybody says, oh, I'm just lazy. It's like, you're not lazy. Mm. You're just anxious as hell.
Yeah.
Or you're tired because your mind is running all day, but not producing anything. It's like running on a treadmill. Mm. You don't see anything.
Mm. Yeah.
And what did your husband say?
he kind of was like, yeah, I think you're right. which to a one was like music to my ears. So I was like, oh yes. Which was funny because I was like, this is not about me being right, this is about helping you like understand yourself and understand like some of the like cultivating more awareness. And I've seen him now be able to like do the hard things and like not procrastinate as much because he has this a greater awareness of what he's doing when he is procrastinating. And so he's been able to like face that anxiety and name it,
mm-hmm.
and also like practice self-compassion and not be so hard on himself, because I think that is a lot of the narrative he internalized was like, I'm just lazy. I'm just not as motivated. I'm just not as driven as other people. And yes. I'm like, no, this isn't about your drive. Like, you're just scared. And that makes mm-hmm. so much sense. It's okay.
Do you want me to blow your mind even more?
Please.
So let's talk about resentment. So perfectionists and resentment, think about what your husband's saying. He's seeing all these people get these gigs that might not have the talent level that he has, but they're just hustling. They're putting themselves out there. They're showing up possibly imperfectly. And so when you start seeing that, it's not only the fear, right? But then there's this bitterness that starts coming up. And when we start getting bitter, that clouds everything. So then we can't even see the value in ourselves. But it's because people have what we want, but we're working so hard, but we're not producing anything.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I mean, yeah, I can relate to that so much as well. And I never connected those dots before.
You know, we just want to be seen. And that's the hardest part about being a perfectionist, is that we want to be seen and we want to be valued. But we're not asking people, because again, if we have those force fields around us, either through hiding or by overly protecting and kind of just being, you know, forcing our way through, we don't get told by the people the most. Like, we miss out on the true validation from others. Because we either deny it and think they're lying or BSing us, or we're not asking for it.
Yeah.
In fact, like I had to yesterday, I had a little mini meltdown last night because I've had to do a lot of things over the past few weeks, and I'm putting myself out there more. And then I just had like some health stuff, which is fine. But all this stuff was going on, but I felt like I was doing everything. And I looked at my husband, I was like, Henry, it would have been a lot if I just had some sort of gesture, whether that's like a card or something, to just acknowledge that what I'm going through is hard. But he didn't think I needed that because I was doing all the things.
Yeah, right.
I was overcompensating.
Yep. And I can so relate to that as someone who does tend to have more like overcompensating behaviors. And like the word that just popped into my mind was resentment. Cause I was like, that's what I do. I like overcompensate. I'm getting it done. So everyone thinks I'm fine and just like getting it done and doing the thing and achieving and succeeding and la, la, la. And then I get mad that no one checks in with me.
Yes.
Which is on me. Like, I'm not speaking my needs. Like,
or then when they do, like my friend checked in on me, I'm like, why are you checking in on me right now? I'm fine.
Yeah.
How dare you doubt me handling my stuff?
Right. Yes.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it is. It is so hard. And I think that you spoke to this kind of in the beginning of this idea of kind of just our macro culture, like conditioning, like there's so much of this like perfectionistic mindset that is like Western American culture. And so there's so much of it that's like, well, this is just normal. Like, this is just how we are. This is how we operate. And I think there's kind of, you know, especially with Brené Brown's research, like, and people kind of waking up to this idea of like, oh, wait, this might not, I might be functioning in a way that's not actually healthy.
Yes. No. Yeah. It's mind blowing when you start seeing like how much it infiltrates everything. I mean, of course, you know, as eating disorder therapists and our awareness of diet culture and how much of that's rooted in perfectionism and all of these things that we are, you know, constantly told about attaining something. But so whether that's diet culture or hustle culture, or I mean, even it blows my mind around here. So at some of the private schools, like private high schools, they have like signing day, you know, they announce to everybody like what's, if they did early decision, the school they get into and this and that. And I'm like, what about, like, I was a solid 3.0 solid 3.0 through high school, college, you know, never the best, but I feel like I'm doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
So like, what is it? We can't always be the winner. Mm-hmm. So then we're just constantly setting ourselves up for disappointment.
Right. Oof. Yeah. I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to be a teacher and.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, being a therapist is a second career for me. I taught first, second, and third grade. And, this was always something I was so aware of in the classroom. Because I, even as young as first grade, I mean, I saw it all the time and tried to so hard to foster a culture that pushed back against these ideas to create a safe space for kids where they didn't, they could learn another way.
Yeah. I mean, what we all want is to live our own lives by our own values. And that's the thing, when you're constantly striving for perfection, your values can't exist in that.
Yeah. Everything gets clouded.
Yes. It's all rules.
Yeah. Rules feel safe.
They
sometimes.
Do.
Sometimes. But also rules are sometimes not helpful.
And like I always tell people, the reason I feel like all or nothing thinking is so prevalent with us is because of exactly what you're saying. If you're, you know, on one side and it's all rules, then the rules are to blame for your life's problems.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I feel bad because I have to follow this rule that I can't X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we go to like party girl Lauren in her 20s, we're not messing with the rules and nobody understands me. Uh-huh. And so I'm miserable because like I'm out of control.
Yeah.
And so there's scapegoats on both sides, but when you're living in the flexible place, we have to take more ownership for our stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not fun.
No, that's not. Mm-mm. There's so much about healing from perfectionism that is connected to black and white, all or nothing, this or that kind of thinking. Yes. And that keeps us really stuck.
Yeah. And bored.
That's true.
So boring. I'm an Enneagram 7. I think I already said that.
I didn't know that.
I didn't. I don't think I said it. Yeah. I'm a 7.
So I love 7s.
7, like we are fun.
You're so fun.
But like, again, we can be a hot mess at times. Uh-huh. But like, you know, as a 7, I like the rules because they can keep me grounded.
Uh-huh.
But I also hate them. And so flexibility is actually really essential for me. To have like guidelines, you know, if we think about the antidote to perfectionism, we're not throwing away the rule book. We're just making the rule book more fluid.
I like that.
So like, instead of, you know, like these 5 rules, no exceptions, you're kind of going to like, hey, this is how we like to vibe around here. If something comes up that we need to shift things, like, let's talk it out. So it makes room for nuance.
Yeah.
But your values become the guidelines.
Right.
And there's so much more that can go in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an important shift.
Yeah. It's so hard.
Amen, sister. It is hard.
It is hard, but like, and part of me, like this thought just came to my mind, like, though, is it hard or is it just uncomfortable?
It's valid. Yeah.
You know, cause I'm saying that it's hard and then I'm not really doing a solid sell of why we shouldn't be perfectionists.
Stick to the old ways, people. Just kidding, don't do that.
Like hey, you know, do you want life to be easy? Just keep being a perfectionist.
Yes.
Like that's why people stay perfectionist.
Yeah, exactly.
It's easier.
Exactly.
It's more comfortable.
You're right. It is uncomfortable. There's times when it might feel hard, but it's primarily uncomfortable. And I think as someone who is on this journey of like, and has been working intentionally on this work of unlearning perfectionism and accepting my imperfect self, like I will say, like, man, there's freedom. Like, there is, there's, I think really this is where I like discovered self-compassion, honestly, is in this journey for me. But I get to let myself off the hook sometimes. And there is a, it's just like, there's a weight that's lifted when you realize and learn and like really start to know with your whole body that like, I'm okay. I am perfectly imperfect and I am loved and I am seen in these imperfections. And it almost becomes like exhausting to like try and be perfect.
Yes.
And I think there's just the word like freedom, like there's such freedom in offering ourselves grace and space to just like be a messy human and not have to have our shit together.
Yeah. The freedom's in like true prioritizing. Like, cause we're saying, okay, what, and it's actually mindfulness. If you think about it, what actually matters in this moment, okay, this doesn't matter. So I'm going to let myself off the hook,
Right.
And like that freedom that you speak of is, it's true. It like you get so much mental energy back and you find yourself actually doing more because you can, if you want to, and if you don't want to, that's fine.
Yeah. It creates more space to live into your values and to, I think, live like, you know, just a more wholehearted life, more present life.
Just like genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this morning, somebody sent me this, they're like, hey, this person, they're looking for a speaker, you know, reach out. And normally in situations like that, I would research all the stuff, you know, ruminate mindlessly over like my pitch and like redo my whole one sheeter. I just sent it. I just sent it.
Yeah.
So it's done at that point. Like, we'll just see what happens.
Right. That was a good move. Just like practicing leaning in.
Yes. Like I have the rest of the day. Like I have the rest of the day now to just be free to do whatever I want to do and not make myself a prisoner to perfectionism and doing the most on something that probably doesn't need to be done.
So knowing what was important to you in that moment.
Right.
And acting within that and letting that guide you and direct you.
Yes.
Oh, this was so good. I could keep talking to you for so long. I learned so much and will continue to learn from you.
Yes. And I'm
thankful to be able to call you a colleague. Just in this Nashville area. I would love for you to tell the people where they can find you and continue to learn from you.
Yeah. So Instagram is Lauren Ruth Martin at Lauren Ruth Martin. And then my podcast is called A Novel Life with Lauren Ruth Martin. And that goes every other week because I'm pacing myself, y'all. I was going full blown every week, new content. And then I slowed myself down. I actually took like an impromptu 4-month break. And then instead of thinking I need everything to happen, I was like, nope, every other week. That gives me time and I can be consistent. So every other week. And then Instagram's where that's my home for all the stuff. And then I just dropped on September 1st my self-care e-course. And then I'm actually, later this year, there will be a procrastination and perfectionism course.
Oh, I'm pumped.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is going to be a gift to so many.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Like that, like what you were talking about earlier, that just gave me chills when you talked about like what you were talking about, like with your husband and having that realization with him. Like that just gave me chills.
Ah,
Wait, husband, fiance, you are married 3 years. Yeah.
We celebrated. I think we had that conversation around the 3 year mark. We celebrated 5 years this year.
Hooray!
Yeah. That's crazy. Amazing. Time flies and moves like molasses all at the same time sometimes.
Absolutely. I feel that 100%.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that you learned something new. Just a reminder that this podcast is about mental health and mental health concepts. Education about psychology and therapy is not a substitute for individual therapy. If you want to help this podcast grow, which would be awesome, and get it into the hands of other listeners, please subscribe, rate, or leave me a review. It really does make a difference.